This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Let's now go to segment three of coverage here on the 3rd of February, 2023, in the trial of Alex Murdaugh.
Here is present, sir.
Thank you. Be seated. All right, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, welcome back. Day number 10. State's case, next witness.
State calls Tom Darnell.
Report in this trial shall be the truth to help you die.
I do. Okay.
Take a seat in the witness stand. State your name again for the record. Spell your last name.
My name is Thomas Edward Darnell. Last name is spelled D-A-R-N-E-L-L.
Good morning, Agent Darnell.
Good morning.
Could you tell the jurors where you work?
I am a fingerprint examiner at the State Law Enforcement Division Forensic Crime Lab.
And how long have you been a fingerprint examiner for SLED?
Approximately 30 years.
Can you tell us some of your training education that you've had?
Yes, ma'am. To begin with, I have a Bachelor of Science degree in Criminal Justice from University of South Carolina, where I graduated in 1982. I started my employment with the Richland County Sheriff's Office in Columbia, where I was employed for about 8 years. I started my career at SLED in 1990 in the Lake Print Crime Scene Department. During that time, I completed an in-house training program that dealt with all aspects of fingerprint science. I've attended a number of courses across the state, as well as out-of-state courses that dealt with all areas of fingerprint science, to include how to process evidence for fingerprints and how to compare fingerprints. And I also trained under the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, in the same area of fingerprints. I've also trained other examiners to do the same job that I'm doing today.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would move to qualify Agent Tom Darnell as an expert in fingerprint analysis.
Says defense.
Objection.
He's so qualified.
Thank you, Your Honor. All right, Agent Darnell, could you just kind of tell us in general about fingerprint evidence?
Well, basically, fingerprint evidence can be most anything. It can be items that are porous, items that are non-porous, items that come to SLED and where we get requested to process them to see if we can identify any fingerprints that might be on the surface. Fingerprints are primarily moisture. About 98% of the fingerprint that may be left on the surface is nothing more than moisture, perspiration, or sweat, if you want to call it sweat. And then once we determine the type of evidence that we have, then we try to develop it. We try to enhance any impressions that might be there. One thing to keep in mind is that in most cases, the fingerprints that we're trying to develop are invisible, basically. A latent print means just that, hidden or invisible. So it would require some enhancement.
And how, or what is the process of finding these hidden fingerprints?
Well, we have several different techniques that we can use, everything from super glue fuming to alternate light sources to fluorescent dye stains to different chemicals that we can use. There's also the black fingerprint powder, which is still being used. We don't use a whole lot of that in our laboratory today, but we tend to go with the fluorescent dye stains and the different light sources. It just depends on the type of evidence that we're trying to process.
And now you mentioned, you say super glue fuming?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you describe how that works?
Super glue, what we do is we take the evidence, first of all, it has to be a non-porous surface.
Can you give us an example of a non-porous surface versus a porous surface?
Non-porous would be like a can, a gun, a cartridge case. Porous would be like paper, a paper cup, paper plate, a piece of like a handwritten note or a check or something like along that line. But the super glue is a commonly used process across the country, in fact across the world, and the super glue is simply heated and it creates a vapor or a fume, and that vapor will affix itself to any impressions that might be present on the surface. It enables us to see it better, and it also enables us to use a different technique or a different step of the process when it comes to trying to enhance the impression.
Okay, and when that print, I guess, is revealed in the fuming process, what do you do to analyze the print?
Well, once we get the print developed, we have it photographed. We have the luxury of having a photo studio within our laboratory, and we have a photographer that will document that for us photographically so that we can then compare it to any known standards that we may be asked to compare it to.
So you would use the photograph for comparison purposes?
Yes, ma'am.
You don't do any kind of lifts of the print or anything like that?
I've done lots of lifts over my career with the black powder and the clear tape, which is what most of you are probably familiar with. In this case, it was black powder was not used. I was working strictly off of a photograph.
So you did receive some items to test in this case for fingerprints?
I did.
I'm going to have you take a look at State's Exhibit 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, and 68. Are those 300 blackout shell cases that you received to process for fingerprint evidence?
It is.
And did you find any evidence on those cases?
Actually, I did not. There was what we call the result that I used in this with these items was that there was no fingerprint evidence was observed.
Would you expect to find fingerprint evidence on buyer cases?
We don't find a lot of developed prints on cartridge cases. It does happen. We do find fingerprints on cartridge cases, but just not a great deal. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the cartridge cases they're exposed to heat, they're exposed to friction, and since fingerprints are so fragile, a lot of times that is probably a couple of reasons why we don't find a lot of prints on cartridge cases.
All right, did you also receive State's Exhibit 33 and 34 to test for or examined for fingerprint evidence?
I did.
Did you find any fingerprint evidence on those shot shells?
I did not.
And again, would you expect to find fingerprint evidence on items of that nature?
You know, we always make the attempt. Sometimes we're surprised when we process evidence that something will develop. I personally I've not had a lot of success with getting prints on shot shells. It's not to say that it hasn't happened.
And you said you've been doing this for about 30 years?
Yes, ma'am.
And in that time, have you ever found yourself a fingerprint on a fired case or shot shell?
I can't recall that I have developed anything that I can identify. I have developed ridge detail, or I have developed fingerprints on cartridge cases, but I can't recall honestly having a case where I was able to actually identify.
Did you also receive a shotgun to check for fingerprint evidence?
I did.
That being State's Exhibit 4, a Benelli Super Black Eagle 3. Did you find any fingerprint evidence on that weapon?
I did not.
What else did you do with that weapon while you had it?
There was an additional request to have it swabbed for touch DNA, which I did. I swabbed various areas of the shotgun for DNA purposes.
And I will hand you State's Exhibit 307. Are those the swabs that you collected from that shotgun?
Yes, ma'am. It has the date that I collected it. It has my name and my initials and on the envelopes as well as on the seal.
Your Honor, at this time we move State's 307 into evidence. The swabs from the shotgun.
I'm not sure which shotgun.
From the Benelli that was recovered at the scene. Yes.
No objection.
It's admitted.
And do you recall where on that gun you collected those swabs?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell the jury?
If I could look at my notes real quick. I swabbed the trigger. I swabbed the rear stock, front stock, and the ejection lever on the shotgun. Yes, and that's the two areas that I swabbed.
And why would you have swabbed those particular areas?
Well, typically in a case involving guns, shotguns, pistols, we typically swab the trigger separately to possibly get a print on the trigger as who might have last had their finger on the trigger. And then we swab other areas of the gun that might be more conducive for touch DNA versus latent prints. Anytime we get something that we have a latent print request and a DNA request, we have to try to determine which area to swab, which area is typically handled by someone that might give us the best chance for any type of forensic evidence, whether it be DNA or latent prints.
And did you also swab the head stamps of those two shot shells?
Yes, I did.
And those swabs are in States 307 up there with the other swabs, is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you have an occasion to also examine Paul's cell phone?
I did.
I'm going to hand you State's Exhibit 309. Are those the swabs that you collected from Paul Murdo's cell phone?
These are swabs that I took from a cell phone. I don't know for sure whose phone it was, but these are swabs that I took from the phone, which was my item 25.
And could you refer to your report to tell us what item 25 listed as?
Item 25 is listed as a one iPhone cell phone, black in color with a clear case.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would move to admit State's Exhibit 309.
No objection.
Did you also examine that cell phone for fingerprints?
I did.
Did you find any fingerprints on the phone?
I did not find anything that I could identify. I found a very small amount of fingerprint evidence on the phone. The result that I had to render was what we refer to as no value for comparison. Which what that simply means is that there was the evidence of someone's fingers having come in contact with the phone. There just was not enough detail, not enough clarity for me to be able to compare it to anyone.
Do you recall examining some other shotguns or rifles in this case?
Yes, ma'am.
That would be a 300 Blackout rifle, a Mossberg shotgun, a Browning shotgun, and another Benelli shotgun?
That's correct.
Did you find any fingerprints on any of those guns?
Nothing that I could identify. Again, the result of no value for comparison was the result that I reported.
And if a gun has a camouflage print, for example, would that make it harder to find fingerprints on that weapon?
Well, not necessarily. We have some very bright lights that we would use to help us pick up anything that might be on a camouflage-type surface. Keep in mind, we're spraying a fluorescent dye stain prior to using the light source, so that does help us see the prints much better. There are some areas on these shotguns that were like textured, which would not be very conducive to prints. But as far as the camouflage area, you know, it makes it a little harder to see, but we do have the means to be able to analyze it thoroughly.
And these items that we've been talking about, when you process them for fingerprint evidence, you use the super glue fuming method?
Yes, ma'am.
While you were processing those guns, did you collect swabs from each gun?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to hand you State's Exhibit 308, if you take a look at that.
Yes, ma'am. These are the envelopes that I placed the swabs from the shotguns. It's got my date and initials and where it came from on the shotgun.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would move State's Exhibit 308 into evidence.
Okay.
Now, did you receive a 30-round magazine that was full of 300 blackout cartridges?
I did.
Did you test that item for fingerprint evidence?
I did.
Did you find any fingerprints on that magazine?
It was, again, as the shotguns, it was all no value for comparison.
What about each of the bullets that was in that magazine? Did you examine them in any way?
Yes, ma'am. I took each one of them out of the magazine and processed all of them individually.
Did you find any fingerprint evidence on those bullets?
No, ma'am. I did not.
And what did you do with these swabs that you collected?
Once I collected swabs, I allowed them to air dry. And then once I secure them into envelopes, I seal them, put my date, initials, and then I package them up accordingly. And they ultimately wind up with the DNA department. I believe in this case, I took them down to our evidence control department, and then DNA will pick them up from there.
All right. One moment, Darnay. No further questions from the state at this time. You'll answer any questions from the
defense.
Seat court, Your Honor. All these items were processed in the lab, is that correct?
That's correct, yes, sir.
And help me to understand this. You processed three shotguns?
I believe that was right, yes, sir.
You processed, were any of them loaded with shotgun shells?
I don't recall them being loaded.
So you did not process any of the, if they were loaded, you didn't process any of the shells in them?
Normally, when a weapon comes into the laboratory, it's cleared and unloaded prior to it getting to our laboratory. So had they been unloaded, I would have, or had they been loaded, they would have been unloaded prior to me receiving them, and I would have processed what had been inside the weapon at that time.
So the weapon we identified earlier as, Benelli Super Black Eagle, the two unfired shotgun shells. You processed that at the lab?
Yes, sir.
Was the gun loaded when it came to you?
My notes do not indicate that it was loaded. And as I said, normally when a weapon, a shotgun, comes into the laboratory, it's unloaded prior to it coming to me. My notes indicate that it was not loaded.
And the other shotguns, I've looked at your analysis on them. that there were no fingerprints of evidentiary value on the three other shotguns, right?
That's correct.
But there's no indication that you processed, if they had been loaded and unloaded, any of those shotgun shells, correct?
That's correct. I only processed what was given, what was brought into the laboratory.
And you processed those on June 9th, is that correct?
That sounds right, yes, sir, June 9th.
Okay. Now, the cartridges, there's a bullet, and then there's a casing on a typical semi-automatic weapon. You were asked to process the ejected cartridges that were involved in the murder, correct? The 308s, I mean the 300 blackouts?
Yes, sir.
And those had been fired, and what you indicated that once a bullet or a shotgun shell had been fired, it heats up. Is that why you can't get a fingerprint off of it?
Well, that would be one possible explanation. Heat, friction, they're on the ground. You know, weather can have an effect sometimes if it's raining or if it's hot or cold. There are lots of things that could have an effect on whether or not a print would be left.
And I think your testimony is that if not rarely, never found fingerprints on an expended casing. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't say rarely, never. I know of cases in our laboratory that have been where they have been able to identify prints on cartridge cases. It just doesn't happen very often, but it does happen.
Okay, but then you processed a number of, there was magazine with a number of 300 blackout shells that had never been fired, correct?
Yes, sir.
Bullets, I'm sorry.
That's correct.
And that's a brass, piece of brass, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, is a piece of brass conducive to fingerprints?
Yes, sir. It can be, yes, sir.
Any evidence these bullets have been, the bullets have been wiped or something, or just, I mean, explain to the jury why you wouldn't normally get fingerprints off of a piece of brass, a unspent bullet. Why is that?
Well, you got to keep in mind that a latent print is nothing more than, or mostly moisture. They're very fragile. It doesn't take much to wipe a print off of a surface. The cartridges I think that you're speaking of were in a magazine, so they've been shoved into a magazine, and then you got to get them out. So you got friction there going on, but most any surface that's smooth and fairly clean and not corrugated or textured can be conducive to prints. I have developed prints on cartridges before. It just doesn't happen very often.
Again, it's a brass surface, almost a polished brass surface. But you say because it's mostly moisture, isn't there some oil involved in that from the fingers? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, you would have, as far as the coming from your fingerprints, from the fingers, or
well,
from
I mean the finger. That I mean, it's always just moisture.
It's mostly 98% to 99% moisture, and then you might have some other substances mixed in there. But it's mostly just sweat is what's left behind.
You do retrieve fingerprints occasionally, do you not? You find fingerprints on things?
Oh yes, sir. I've developed quite a few prints in my 30 years of doing this.
And once you develop a print, you can compare it based on how many points you have to have to do a comparison to make a match.
Well, there's no set number. In this country, where you have to have a certain minimum number of points, you just have to have a sufficient amount of clarity and to be able to determine that an impression was made by a certain individual.
Okay. Did you ever go to the scene of these murders?
No, sir, I did not.
You were not called out that night?
No, sir.
So the forensic folks that went out there, to your knowledge, did they throw any powder down? Did they do anything to find any fingerprints that night?
I honestly don't know. I did not look at their notes from their crime scene or what have you. I really had no real reason to. I was just asked to process the things that they brought.
So let me ask you this. You got a doorknob right here. Doorknob. I just grabbed it to open it. It's brass. Would that leave a fingerprint?
It's possible. You have to consider how much someone perspires when they touch something. You have to consider how soon after the doorknob was touched did someone else grab the doorknob, because a leg print is extremely fragile. It doesn't take much to obliterate a print.
But you would check. If you were on the scene, you'd look.
If I was on the scene and I felt like that area was accessed by someone, I probably would have checked, yes, sir.
I mean, if it appeared that there had been a shotgun blast to the victim inside room behind that door, and you didn't know whether the door was open or closed before that person was shepherded in there or walked in there, you would want to at least look at the knob, right?
Yes, sir. I probably would, but I was not on this scene, so I don't really know exactly what all they had going on. So, but if with your scenario that you're speaking of, yes, sir. I probably would have checked.
And you would expect to see notes somewhere from the crime scene folks that they looked at the doorknob. But you can't just eyeball it. Don't you have to put some powder on it, or don't you have to put something on it to raise the visibility of the fingerprint?
Well, yes, sir. In some cases, you can actually see a print if it's more of a what we call a patent print. A patent print is a print that might be left behind with a residue. Could be in grease, could be in blood, it could be in dirt, anything such as that. So, but ordinarily, when you go to look for prints, you've got to do some sort of processing to a surface, depending on the surface and depending on just what you're trying to do.
So, if you had a relatively small room where somebody's head had exploded and blood and all kinds of bodily fluids were sprayed over the inside of that room, you would want to take a meticulous examination of that room to see if there are any fingerprints in blood or other bodily fluids, would you not? Would you?
I would, yes, sir.
And you would expect to see something in some report by the crime scene folks where they actually did such an examination, would you not? Would you expect to see notes detailing that they at least looked at it?
Yes, sir. I mean, I wasn't at the scene. I can, but if you're describing this type of a scene, if it was me, I would take notes. Detailed notes, because photographs, notes, sketches, all that kind of goes hand in hand.
But there should have been, strike that. You would also expect to see any surface that could have come into contact with a perpetrator to have been processed, either photographed or processed in some way. You would expect to see that in the notes of the crime scene investigators, correct?
I would think in the notes or in their testimony or anything such as that, there should be something to explain what was done. Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you know if there was a fingerprint person or somebody that had those skills in the crime scene team that came out that night?
I don't know. I know that there was no one from the latent printing department where I worked at the scene that day.
Do you go out to crime scenes? Do you go to crime scenes?
I've done plenty in my earlier days, but I have not been on crime scenes for quite some time.
Do you have people in your latent print unit that do go to crime scenes?
Not really. The late print department, the way it was set up, we pretty much are in the laboratory setting, and we process evidence that comes in from crime scenes. We don't typically go to the crime scene.
And so I guess if I'm summarizing this, everything they had you look at, you looked at in the lab.
Yes, sir.
And you found no, when I say identifiable prints, it sounds to me like you found no evidence of any prints.
Well, I found any time I report something is no value for comparison, that means that I did find evidence of fingerprints. it just wasn't enough to compare it to anyone. Anytime I say nothing was observed, that means there was nothing observed.
So, I mean, I looked at all these. Other than the no value for comparison on the cell phone, that would mean you saw something but you didn't have enough to compare.
Yes, sir, and you know, it was no value. You know, keep in mind again, their latents are fragile. You've got weather involved, you know, water, rain, that sort of thing. Certainly, is detrimental to fingerprint evidence being left behind.
So, other than the cell phone, everyone else says no fingerprint evidence was observed. That would mean there was nothing, not even a partial, right?
Yes, sir. Anytime that result is in the report, that's what that means.
So other than the cell phone, you didn't even find any evidence of fingerprints, not a partial, not a smudge, not anything.
Well, I believe there were some additional long guns that came into me where I did get no value for comparison, but the initial shotgun that came into me was nothing was observed. Yes, sir.
And the initial shotgun would have been number 22.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. And would it surprise you to know that Mr. Murdaugh was seen holding that shotgun, had actually retrieved it from his house,
objection,
brought it down to the
Honor,
murder scene?
Counsel's testifying.
Response?
I'm just citing evidence that the state's already put into evidence. I'm not testifying to it. If these are facts that have been already established by the state. He's an expert. He can opine.
Pardon?
He's an expert, therefore he can give an opinion.
The objection's overruled.
Would it surprise you to know that Mr. Murdaugh was seen that evening when first responders came holding that shotgun, and the state has indicated, I mean, that's not in conflict. I mean, no one's challenging that. And yet there were you found no evidence of fingerprints. Is that correct?
Right, yes, sir. And, you know, that's, you know, prints aren't always left on surfaces when you touch them. You know, just because you touch something does not mean you're going to leave a print. And there are all kind of variables as to why.
Would you agree with me you found no prints on any of the items you were asked to examine? Cartridge cases, fired, unfired, shotguns, the shells in the shotguns. You just found no prints whatsoever.
I found none of value for comparison, which tells me that there was something there, but it just wasn't of value to compare.
And that's only on the cell phone.
The cell phone and then the additional long guns that came into me later.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Beg the court's indulgence. Thank you, sir. No more questions.
Can I read that right?
You were previously lieutenant of crime scene?
Yes, ma'am. I was actually promoted to lieutenant over the Lake Print Crime Scene Department in 1998, where I was in that role for about 6 years.
And in your experience in that position, are crime scene personnel trained to look for fingerprints at a crime scene?
Yes, ma'am. Back when I was a lieutenant over the crime scene department, we used to do the crime scene, we did the printing, we did everything. Now it's two separate departments. We have a late print department and we have a crime scene department. The crime scene department, as I understand it, they are trained in how to process crime scenes, which would include how to process certain things on this own scene for fingerprints. In other words, if it was something that was large and not able to transport back to the laboratory, they do get some training in how to process for prints.
And with such a bloody scene, did you get any bloody prints in this case?
I was not submitted any bloody prints in this case.
Thank you. Nothing further from the staff.
Nothing further.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
Thanks, sir.
Call your next witness.
Raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give to this court to be the whole truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Have a seat on the witness stand. Repeat your name and spell your last name for the record.
Blake Johnson, last name, J-O-H-N-S-O-N.
Hi, Agent Johnson.
Hello.
Could you tell the jury where you work?
I work for the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division.
And how long have you been with SLED?
Been with SLED a little over 5 years.
And what are some of the duties of your position?
At SLED, I work for the investigative services in the Lowcountry region. And as part of that, I investigate crimes within the lower 12 counties to include homicides, officer-involved shootings, cases such as that.
And with your involvement in the investigation of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh's murders, did you have a chance to collect some buccal swabs in that case?
I did.
I'm going to show you what's been marked as State's Exhibit 338 and State's Exhibit 339.
This one is a buccal swab that I took from Claude Rowe, C.B. Rowe. And
that's takes exhibit 338.
And this is a buccal swab that I took from Connor Cook.
Okay. And how do you know you took these two buccal swabs?
Because of the writing on the outside. This is that exterior envelope. If I open them, the one that I have side would be inside.
All right. And how did you collect these buccal swabs?
I was provided buccal swabs. They come two to a pack in a sterile pack. They're opened, and the inside of between the cheek and gum of both subjects are swabbed, and they're put back in the envelope and sealed.
And sealed?
Yep.
Okay. They're sealed so nobody can tamper or alter those buccal swabs?
Yep. Evidence tape is placed on the seal, and it's signed and initialed and dated.
Your Honor, at this time, the state removes State's Exhibit 338 and 339 into evidence.
No objection, Your Honor.
You're admitted.
And, Your Honor, we have no further questions for this witness.
No questions.
Thank you. You may step down. Your next witness.
Raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give this court to be the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. You have a seat on the witness stand. Repeat your name and spell your last name for the record.
Lawrence Wiggins, W-I-G-G-I-N-S.
I believe it's Chief Wiggins now, is that correct?
That is correct.
Are you the chief of Allendale? Is it Sheriff's Office, Police Department?
Yes, so I'm currently employed as the chief of police for the town of Allendale.
But back in 2021, where were you employed?
I was employed with the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division. I was assigned to the investigative services, and I worked out of the regional office in Walterboro.
And at that time, were you involved in the investigation of the deaths of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh?
I was preliminarily.
And did you have an occasion to collect some buccal swabs?
I did.
I'm going to hand you State's Exhibit 336 and 337. If you could take a look at those and tell us what we have there.
We have buckle swabs taken from Mr. Roger Davis and Anthony Cook.
And you collected those swabs?
I did.
And how do you know you collected it?
My initials and...
I'll consent to the admission of these rather than going through the process of how he identified them and collected them. Now, she's welcome to do that, but I'm just trying to save a little time here.
All right.
So State's Exhibit 336 and 337. Well, Your Honor, we would have no further questions for this witness then.
No questions, Your Honor.
Right. Thank you, sir.
That was easy.
The state would next call Chandler Horney.
Do you swear from the testimony you're about to give this court to be the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay, have a seat on the witness stand. Please repeat your name and spell your last name for the record.
Hi, my name is Chandler Horney, H-O-R-N-E-Y.
And Agent Horney, can you tell the jury who you've worked for?
I work for the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division.
Okay, and what is your position there?
I'm a special agent with the Vice Services Unit.
Okay. And were you involved in the murder investigation of Paul and Maggie Murdoch?
I was.
And did you collect some buckle swabs or in this case?
I did.
Okay. I'm going to hand you State's Exhibit 340. You will tell us what those are.
These are the collected buckle swabs from Morgan Dowdy and Miley Altman.
And how were those collected?
They were actually collected by a coworker, Special Agent Anthony Sampson. In my presence, he took the swabs of the inside of both of these individuals' cheeks.
And then when he took the swabs, he placed them in?
This envelope.
Okay. And they were placed in bags that were sealed not to be tampered with?
Yes, ma'am.
Your Honor, at this time, the state removes State's Exhibit 340 into evidence.
No objection.
It's admitted.
We have no further questions for this agent.
Sorry, Your Honor.
Any questions?
No, sir. Thank you.
Step down.
Thank you.
Calls Joe Moore Abialde.
Raise your right hand. Do you swear from the testimony you're about to give this court to be the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay, have a seat on the witness stand. Please repeat your name and spell your last name for the record.
Joe Marr, Abialde, spelling my last name is A-L-B as in Bravo, A-Y-A-L-D-E, Abialde. If it makes it any easier, my peers call me Joe.
Joe. Thank you, Joe. And you did tell me a little trick to pronouncing that last name there.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, what was that?
If you remember the phrase, I'll be here all day and drop the here, I'll be all day, you got it.
And thank you so much for sharing that with me.
Yes, ma'am.
And you work for SLED, is that right?
I do.
Okay, and did you have the chance to collect some buccal swabs in the investigation of the murders of Paul and Maggie Murdoch?
I did.
I'm going to hand you State's Exhibit 342, 343, and 344. Go take a look, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and State's Exhibit 342 is a buccal swab you collected from who?
All right, this Exhibit 342 is from Mr. Randy Murdoch.
Okay, and then 343?
343 is a DNA sample collected from a Hippolito Torres.
And 344?
This final buccal sample was collected from his son, Alan Gonzalez.
And how did you collect these buccal swabs?
Yes, ma'am. These were collected via a DNA or buccal swab kit, which is essentially is a swab is a special agent. Johnson explained to you earlier. So it's simply a swab from each side of the inner cheek, placed into a secured envelope, and then sealed in a evidence envelope, such as this one.
It would be sealed so it was not tampered with, is that right?
That's correct, ma'am.
Okay. At this time, this tape removes tapes 342, 343 and 344 into evidence.
It says okay. Defense. Any objections?
No, sir.
Admitted without objection.
Thank you, Your Honor. State has no further questions for Judge. Thank you.
Cross examination.
Thank you for your indulgence. One moment. Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, next witness.
All right, next witness is going to be fairly lengthy, and Mr. Fernandez is going to call him, and we'd ask for just a moment to get the exhibits out that he needs and get them in order so it moves orderly before the jury, if we could.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll take a brief break.
That concludes the third segment of testimony today in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. More to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of the updates and courtroom testimony as we have them for you right here. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.